VentureCast.
Music.
Horror.
Subculture. And overall badass.
Welcome
to Kettle Whistle Radio. With your hosts, Dave and Sean.
The Washington County Fair with D, and very family friendly place, great time, actually inexpensive, good food, good people, tractor pulls, my first. However, this only comes up because I have a friend going to see Cattle Decapitation, death metal band, real heavy metal. And there was a woman there with a toddler in each hand, and she was wearing a dying fetus black concert t-shirt. I just thought I'd make note of that. Irony comes in all shapes and forms. Hello, folks, friends, and fiends. Welcome back to Kettle Whistle Radio. And another author edition where I'll be interviewing Ed Ashton, friend of the show now, and I'll be joined with Frank, my brother-in-law, who actually knows Ed Ashton as a friend. And we'll get into all of that. Ed Ashton is the author of Mickey 7. Okay, soon to be a major motion picture by Brad Pitt Production. I believe it's Plan B Productions, in March 2024. It will be called Mickey 17. This book, Mickey 7, is an extraordinary science fiction novel. Horror has let me down lately, folks, so I've been venturing more into the science fiction of late. Of course, we will be having excellent music coming your way. Let's see. I'm going to go out at the end of the show with Old Town Crier, who you've heard before, my friend Jim Lau. We're going to hear Come Home, Caroline. We're going to go out with that. Now, speaking of Old Town Crier, the proceeds from this album will go to charity. I'll just read this from Jim himself. Again, you'll hear this at the end of the show. All right. Hi, David. I released my first LP in January, and I wanted to share the link with you. It's a benefit album for Pine Street Inn, a charitable organization whose mission is to end homelessness. Hope you enjoy it. And yes, so if you go to Bandcamp and purchase Old Town Crier, this particular LP, A Night with Old Town Crier, it'll go to a charitable organization to help end homelessness. And the name of the charitable organization, once again, is Pine Street Inn. Hopefully, you guys can do your part on that one. Second song you'll hear, of course, tonight, at the onset of the interview, will be from Jess Weary, Amy Dearest, a great tune that got local airplay here in Pittsburgh. And we're going to start off with a banger, Anastasia Elliott, Lion's Den. But Jess Weary, hey, congratulations, kid. She just gave birth, and we'll get more from her later. I want her to tell her story herself. We're going to have her in here. But Jess Weary, Amy Dearest, you'll be hearing that in a little bit. But first, we'll start off with Anastasia Elliott, Lion's Den. But a lot has happened, not so much in the horror realm, but traveling. Went to Salem, Massachusetts. With D, and we'll be doing a show on that a little later on, maybe close to Halloween. Salem was great, and oddly enough, Jim Lau and Old Town Crier are from Middleborough, Massachusetts. So Massachusetts is just in the news lately for us. Salem was great. Fantastic tours. Great people. Great stores. Oh, my God. So much cool shopping there. Just weird stuff you can't get anywhere else. But we'll talk about that at another date. Let's see. I was in Kecksburg with Heather Taddy. We had a blast at that. If you're familiar with the Kecksburg incident, lots of UFOologists out there. Met some interesting folks there. That will be another episode. I will be talking about Kecksburg, PA, not too far from where I am right now. That was with Heather Taddy. We had a blast. I hope you listened to that episode prior to this one with Heather. We talked about some stuff that she's doing right now, paranormally yours. I've been to Looney Tune Land with Sean. Alas, not a real place, but I'm there with him every day. It's better than some real places that I've been to, especially that being contemporary horror movies of late. They've taken me to not-so-great places, and what a shame. But let's get into... You're going to enjoy this interview with Ed Ashton, and hopefully you guys will go see the movie in March. Read the book now. You can pick up the sequel, Antimatter Blues, which is available right now. If you like Mickey 7, pick up the sequel, because something tells me this is going to be a hit. The book itself was a hit. It got, it's going to be a major motion picture. So it got definitely the attention of some folks out west. So enjoy the interview and enjoy Ed Ashton. And there is so much more. There is something else too. I'm going to have to put this up. This came up just before recording. This movie, Rebel Moon. Have you seen the trailer for it? Interestingly enough, it was originally going to be a Snyder Star Wars film. Well, let's see here. A version of Rebel Moon could have been a Star Wars movie, but it was. I guess they turned it down. And Zack Snyder decided to make it an independent film, independent of Star Wars. Which is very interesting, because I think maybe it was a poor choice by the Kennedy compound, as this looks really good, entertaining, sci-fi-wise. And also very good for the Snyder Battalion, Zack Snyder and his battalion, as this looks like a great film without any Star Wars involvement, if you ask me. But Rebel Moon, you could check out the trailer, looks very interesting. And we'll see when that comes out, where that goes. But yeah, no longer affiliated with Star Wars. I don't know that it ever was. Looks like it was pitched and he didn't want to make changes or they didn't want to make changes. Could care less at this point. Just want to see a good sci-fi and good horror, man. This writer's strike's got to end. And when it does, we got a contingent of guests coming up. Better believe it, because we ran into some Walking Dead... folks, while out on the beach this summer in Cape Cod, and you may have heard that from an earlier episode, and they just obviously, you know, we have to wait till the writer strike's over for them to come on, but yeah, great episodes coming your way. But right now we're going to get into my friend, actually this is ironic, Anastasia Elliott was the last interview I had before I got sick back in February, and great episode back then. She's, man, what a set of pipes on this girl. She can sing and arrange and write just great music. Incredible musician, Anastasia Elliott. Enjoy Lion's Den. Look her up and her other stuff. You won't be disappointed. Enjoy, folks. And we'll talk soon. Enjoy this interview as well, all right? And as always, you can find me on Facebook and go to also Kettle Whistle Radio on Facebook. Give us a like. You can also go to fairlydarkproductions.com and look at the books that are there, or go to Kablam Comics or Burning Bulb Publishing /comics for Dr. Peeler, Demon Psychiatrist. We always need your help. And issue 2 is coming out very soon. All right, thanks. Actually, it's done. Coming out very soon. All right, bye.
Hot on my jacks. You know. Hi, this is Martin Atkins from Public Image Limited, Killing Joke, Ministry, Nine Inch Nails, Pigface and the Damage Manual and Murder Inc. and Brian Brain, and you're listening to Kettle Whistle Radio.
Folks, friends, and fiends, welcome back to Kettle Whistle Radio. Tonight we get into science fiction and the horror it brings through hope. We are talking intergalactic colonization and, dare I say, cloning expendables. If you think you had a rough day, imagine intentionally witnessing your own gruesome death multiple times for the sake of humanity. Who might actually despise you for doing it? I have with me right now, very special guest, author Edward Ashton of the science fiction novel Mickey 7, soon to be a motion picture, Mickey 17. And I've got Frank in the background who made this thing happen. Frank Latour, are you with me?
I'm here.
All right, Mr. Ashton, thank you so much for doing this and welcome aboard.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, are you kidding me? You took the time here. How's the Earth treating you today, sir?
You know what? So far, so good. It's a beautiful day. I live in the middle of the woods. I'm looking out the window at a bunch of birds and trees, and you can't beat that.
Couldn't be further removed from your novel.
Exactly.
Okay, so I have Frank Latour with me, who you guys had a friendly relationship with that goes back some, and he happens to be my brother-in-law.
Yep. Yeah, it goes back just a bit, Ed, right? I guess, 30-plus years?
Wow. Oh, good Lord, don't tell me that. Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, what? We met beginning of my freshman year in college, first,
that
right?
That is correct, yep.
Yep, I spent many hours in the basketball court.
Good background.
A fun Southern thing.
Very.
Yeah, I actually met, like I said, met Ed in college, but he was already friends from high school with someone who became a very good friend of mine and roommate in college, John.
Yeah, I've known John since seventh grade. So yeah, that goes back a long way.
Yep.
I love it, man. No, I love a story within a story here. I'm just honored to have you aboard. I finished watching your trailer for like the fourth time. Frank presented that to me. I think Frank talked about this book a year ago with me. And I'm just glad to have this opportunity. I actually, coming hot off the heels, I was actually in the hospital today because I'm coming off of a sickness and my audience is sick of hearing about this. But I had a cholangiogram today. It was rather painful. That's where they stick a tube inside. Well, today they stuck a tube to reinsert it to my gallbladder to make sure it's draining properly. It was not a fun exercise. But I was thinking about Mickey the entire time I'm there and what he goes through in that in the cycler.
Yeah, I'm a medical researcher, so I probably know a little too much about what can go wrong and what bad things can happen to you in medical procedures. So I did put a little bit of that into the book.
I'll be consulting you for many. I just spent some time in the hospital, so yeah, you may hear from me about some things outside of the book. Okay, so was science fiction always your genre for writing?
Not per se. It's always been a love of mine. Science fiction was my first love, honestly. I started reading people like Clifford D. Simak, pulling it off my dad's shelf when I was 5 or 6 years old. So that's something that's been with me my entire life. Frank may remember some of the writing that I did when I was in college. That was not science fiction related. I actually a little bit of a career writing literary fiction. Sold some short stories to various places. Frank, I think I shared a sheet pizza with you once that I won in a fiction writing contest.
There you go.
At one point in college.
Yeah.
Payment and pizza is always welcome.
Oh yeah, no, that was one of the. I still consider that one of the best. I sold a story to the newsletter of an Italian sausage company, and they paid me in pizza, and that's one of the best deals I've ever gotten. With all the qualities to St. Martin's Press, I still consider that one up at the top of the list.
Well, now I know you're an East Coast guy, and I'm standing up in, and I applaud you for the pizza.
For many reasons, Ed is an interesting dude because he might be one of the few engineering literary writers that I know of. Like he touched upon knowing medical, but ask Ed anything and he'll pretty much have an answer for you and it'll be spot on in detail.
Okay, well, that's cool.
I am a semi-professional know-it-all. No, that is actually true.
Okay, I may have to have you as a co-host once in a while. That would be depending on what the content is, might be really interesting. And speaking of content, you have a sequel to this one, this book, Mickey 7. The sequel just came out a week or two ago.
And actually came out in March.
Oh, so wow. I'm behind.
Well, I actually just approved the cover design for the paperback, which will be coming out in about 5 months now.
Very cool. Is that Antimatter Blues?
That is correct.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, Frank was showing me a picture of it. I don't know, Frank, if you got a copy of it already, but I can't wait to read that.
I did, and I'm ashamed to say I have not had a chance to get it to it yet. I was supposed to bring it on vacation with us, and it's stayed on the table that I was home before I stuck, didn't grab before he left.
There we go. That infamous table that you come back from vacation. Yeah. Oh yeah, I meant to bring that. Ed, your book went. I actually commandeered his copy that you signed for vacation out of desperation. I had nothing to read, and I said, Frank, please, can I borrow this? He's like, I want that back because you signed it. You know, I got to get that to him. And I remember a class way back when how to torture an author. Is tell them, yeah, I bought your book and I lent it out to 12 of my friends. You know, that's one of the worst things you could do. Like, you buy your own copy, which we do here. We believe in still buying music here in this show, if you could believe that.
David is going to send you a box of sausages, though, as payment for that. So you should be
I do appreciate that. Right. I did learn later that money can be exchanged for goods and services and cash. I could have bought.
That's not
goods,
fun. That's not.
I didn't know that at the time, but that is something I picked up along the way.
That's not going to catch on. That's a fad.
Well, listen, I did sense a tongue-in-cheek quality in your main character, Mickey Seven. He seemed to always have his own inside jokes. I'm kind of gathering that maybe some of that rubbed off of you. I'm not sure yet. I'm just gathering because I'm a writer myself and I pick up on these things. But if you want to give like a quick synopsis on what people have to look forward to with this book, that would be great.
Sure. So Mickey Seven, the short pitch, the one sentence is it's a book about a man whose job is to die. Mickey is an expendable. He is someone who has been recruited to a colonization mission. They're trying to colonize a very hostile planet. It's a very dangerous mission. There are a lot of dangerous jobs. And his responsibility is to do everything that is extraordinarily dangerous, the sort of things that are likely to get you killed, with the caveat that when he does get killed, they're able to reconstitute a body and basically download his brain back into it. So he's sort of in an infinite loop of dying and being reborn, which sounds very zen at first until you realize that he actually has to experience all this dying, and it turns out it's really not fun. And so by the beginning of the book, the reason his name is Mickey Seven is that he's already died six times, and he has realized at this point that this was not his smartest move. it's not actually a great gig. It was described by one of the reviewers as literally the worst job in the universe, and I think that's pretty accurate. Not least because it is the one job that you can never leave. You can't even die to escape it.
It's amazing. I didn't even think of
it. Once you're in it, you're in there forever. And that's sort of the existential bind that Mickey finds himself in at the beginning of the book. And obviously, because I'm an author and therefore a sadist, as the book progresses, things actually get worse for him from there. And that's just kind of how things go.
It gets rather complicated. And like I said, he seems to have a sense of humor. I guess when dying is your profession, you kind of, if you can't smile once in a while on the inside, you go crazy, which crazy
you kinda have to.
A little bit. You delve into immortality. We'll get into that a little bit later. But teleportation paradox and Star Trek transporters, I couldn't help but think about it because I read something, and I think Frank, we talked about it, where you're not the same person after you transport in the Star Trek universe. And I think that, I don't know if that's the science behind all science fiction, but you kind of touch on that quite a bit.
This is something that I've thought about ever since I was a little kid, exactly from watching Star Trek. I remember even being like 5 years old and watching Star Trek. And it was very obvious to me that transporter array was not transporting anyone. That was a murder machine. you could see them dissolve, right? They like literally are getting dissolved, and then they build a new one on the other end. And looks, talks, acts just like the original person, but it's not, just like you said, it's not the original person.
Amazing.
And nobody in the show seems to realize that. They all just take it for granted that, I'm just going to walk out the other end. And this is a philosophical debate, actually, that's been going on since the 1750s. This was first raised, the first reference I could find to it was a letter to the Royal Scientific Society in London, which asked the question, which to me it's absolutely fascinating that there are people thinking about this when it was complete fantasy, and now we're almost to the point where we can make this a reality.
Scary.
The question posed was, would it be possible if I were to transpose my soul into another body exactly matching mine? Would I be the same person, or would I be a different person? And that's a debate that's been going on ever since. And there's not a clean solution. There's not a clean solution to it.
In the Ship of Theseus, you bring up a few times, and Frank also explained to me too, how is that ship still the same ship after you've repaired it several times?
That's a slightly different question. That one goes all the way back to Plutarch. That's a many thousands of years old puzzle. And again, like, just fascinates me how far ahead of their time these guys were, because as it turns out, that is a very tight analogy for a human life. Because you and I sitting here, there's not a cell in our bodies that was part of our bodies 15 years ago. We are a completely different colony of organisms. We are the Ship of Theseus. We're a completely different colony of organisms right now than we were, 10, 15 years ago. And here's the fun thing. In my day job, one of the things I work with is functional magnetic resonance imaging. And this is a technique that lets us map what your brain is doing when you're experiencing different stimuli, when you're suffering pain or thinking about the smell of cinnamon or remembering your first kiss. And we can map exactly what part of your brain is active when you're doing these different things. And so if I put you in the scanner and ask you to remember something you did yesterday or to imagine something you might do tomorrow, there is one particular part of your brain that is responsible for that job, and that part will light up. If I ask you to think about something Frank did yesterday or to imagine something Frank will do tomorrow, there's a different part of your brain that does that. It's totally different, a different structure physically in your brain that lights up. If I ask you to remember something that happened to you 20 years ago or to imagine yourself 20 years in the future, you can probably guess which part of your brain lights up. It's the other person part. So on some level, your body, your brain knows that you are a completely different person than you were 20 years ago and that you will be a completely different person 20 years from now. That's why things like the public service announcements about that they used to run about smoking, where they're like, you know, you'll get cancer when you're 60, did nothing. They had no effect on anyone. Because intellectually, you may know that's going to be you when you're 60 years old, dying in a cancer ward. But on an emotional level, you don't believe it. Fundamentally, you don't believe it. That's someone else, and it's his problem to be dying in that cancer ward. You're having fun today.
Right.
Dude, that's like, crazy.
It's true, though, because you felt that way sitting in a seventh grade health class. Why am I in here? We don't need to know this stuff. It'll never affect me.
Exactly. But, and like on a level, you were right, because all those cells that were making you up at that time, they're not part of you now. The problems you're having right now, those cells are long gone. They don't care.
I just had a bout with necrotic cells. So, yeah, I have I totally related to Mickey in this case. When we meet Mickey 7, he's on his seventh expendable self with memory uploads of some of his past selves. Not all of them. I don't want to give too many spoilers there. But he adamantly, he must upload his death to his superiors just for the perusing of science. Is that based, or is it also for military purposes?
Well, it's the primary justification is so that he learns from his deaths.
Okay.
So that, you know, if you make a mistake and you fall down a hole, let's not do that again.
Which is not so funny.
Yeah.
I didn't want to skip ahead, but now you got invited to the set of the film, which I believe comes out March, according to the trailer.
Yep, March 29th.
Okay.
And yes, I did get to watch some of the filming. It was absolutely fascinating.
Nice.
Bong Joon-ho is one of the nicest people I've ever met.
We know from Parasite recently.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. The multi Oscar award winning director. He walked me around the set. He took me through there. They're doing this with practical sets. They filmed it with practical sets,
nice.
Not with CGI primarily.
All right.
So I got to actually, you know, walk inside these things that I had kind of dreamed up in this.
That's
this
so book. Cool.
And these guys have brought it to life. And yeah, it was absolutely like one of the peak experiences in my life.
I'm glad to hear that. I was afraid that, because that question sometimes can borderline on disappointment for some authors or directors in that case, or actors that I've talked to. Like, how do you feel about the casting director and who as well as how the characters are portrayed?
Here's the thing. Any author who has a book picked up by Warner Brothers Studios and made into a film by Bong Joon-ho and complains about anything else for the rest of his life needs to really check himself and learn how to practice gratitude.
Agreed. And you just totally quoted my wife from about an hour ago.
I am not interested in being like a delicate artist who says, "Oh no, they didn't do exactly what I did in my book." That's not how movies work. Movies and books, two totally different things.
Yep.
There are some different things. There are things that are the same. I really feel that director Bong captured the spirit of the book. A lot of the themes of the book are really captured well. Obviously there are some things that he had to change because, you know, a movie is visual and kinetic and a book is wordy and thinky, and they're, like I said, they're two different art forms.
Absolutely.
But I was really pleased with the script. It was amazing to see the work they were doing on set, and I absolutely cannot wait to see the film on the screen.
Me too. I'm so excited.
Let me just interject here, because I don't think Ed is giving this whole production enough credit for what he's created here. This is an A-list cast in this movie that is coming forth.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just some low budget, you know, independent film. This is a major motion picture, and I mean, can we talk about with the SAG strikes and everything? Are we able to talk about and the writer strike? Can we talk about the film who's in it and stuff, or are we not allowed to do that? For
I mean, it's all public knowledge. That's
right. You know, just Robert Pattinson is the lead.
Yep.
I mean, okay. Tony Collette.
Yep.
Stephen Yeun of Walking Dead fame.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Ruffalo, you've got the Hulk in your movie.
Yeah, we got Batman and the Hulk. I mean,
yeah, you got. So it's almost like
we're halfway to an Avengers here.
Yeah, crossover. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, this is something that's amazing, and you know, I'm blown away by what's happening here, and so proud of it.
Blown away. Absolutely, the cast is amazing. I imagine, and Ed, correct me if I'm wrong here, because I could be very off. I imagine a young Terry O'Quinn as Mickey. I don't know why, but there was even a John Locke reference in your book.
Yep, there was.
I don't know why his face just kept his little smirk. Even when he knew, when Mickey 7 knew that he was going to be facing possible death, he had that sense, like, I could see his smirk. And for some reason, Terry O'Quinn has that same thing in the John Locke character. That's just something I picked up on. I don't know where you were with the John Locke reference, or if that was an inside joke.
I mean, I was referencing the philosopher from the.
I was just going to say that.
You know.
Perfect. I stepped in my own.
There's no wrong answers here.
That's fantastic. All right. Let's talk about the sentient beings known as the Creepers. There are monsters, folks. There are creatures in this movie and book. How did they come about, the Creepers? You were just looking for some kind of beings on the planet that they're going to colonize that would cause some kind of friction?
Well, I mean, one of the most interesting things to me is the idea of non-human intelligence. That's another thing that I've just sort of geeked out on since I was a kid. And in particular, I feel very often that science fiction doesn't do alien intelligence well, because it's very tempting for us to just imagine, like from Star Trek, a guy with green skin. He's just a guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a guy with green skin, or a human with an extra arm, or a human with an extra eye, or whatever. But they think and act just like us. And I don't, that, you know, if we ever do encounter alien intelligence, that's not what's going to happen. You've got something that evolved in a completely different environment than us, that has a completely different genetic makeup than us. It's going to behave and think in very different ways. And that's something I wanted to try to illustrate and try to capture. And I do a lot more of it in Antimatter Blues. There's a lot more interaction with the Creepers in that book. But I wanted to have a foil for the humans to play off of. And also I wanted to have a sort of a way to talk about the difference between the way a human thinks and the way something that lived in an environment like Niflheim would think.
Okay.
It's interesting to even just by the name that they're called Creepers, by the characters in the book. It's like these humans, almost by referring to them, that don't even consider them as equals. You know what I mean? Just to call them a creeper. You know, it's not. It kind of touches upon that non-human sentient creature. Like, it's almost in their minds already that they can't be an equal to a human because they look different and think differently. Mm.
Isn't that exactly how humans have been behaving for the last 200,000 years?
Exactly right. Yep. So it's exactly right.
Where did this idea originate? Because you thank a lot of people for it.
The idea for the book,
yeah,
or the idea for
the story itself. Yeah.
This actually started with an attempt at a short story in 2014. The first chapter of the book was supposed to be a short story, and I got to the end of that chapter and I'm like, this isn't actually over. I got to, and then so then I was like, well, maybe it's not a short story, maybe this is actually a novella. So I kept writing. I set it aside, I did some other projects, but I kept coming back to it because it just the character of Mickey really sort of fascinated me. And then, you know, eventually I realized, hey, that this is a novel. And that was in 2018. Mm-hmm. Finished the book in 2019. And then, you know, things have sort of snowballed from there.
That's the natural progression, a short story that is your baby becomes an adult right before your eyes. Those are some of the best stories. I'm going to just brag. That's how I got published. I had a short story that had to, my publisher said, can you make this a novel? And boom, overnight, basically, I almost did because it came natural. I with Mickey, I found myself relating a lot of past, we'll say employment, with his situation. Just in the corporate world, I worked in the corporate world for like 30 years with different, very different jobs. And let's talk about these characters. You have Marshall, who is his commanding officer. He's an asshole. Berto is supposed to be his friend, but he seems to be an opportunistic fair weather friend. Kat, to me, is very HR, though she comes across as very cool at first. HR, and she works for security, so she has to do her duty. Nasha is his love interest, who might just have a death fetish. He's not really surrounded by the greatest peers.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely. I mean, I actually like all those characters.
Oh, so do I. Don't get me wrong.
This is a conversation I've had with a number of different people. Science fiction, one of the things that you see is it's a trope to have these sort of idealized characters, mm-hmm. like the guy in Dune or any of Asimov's heroes. Uh-huh. They're just like hyper competent and super upstanding, moral upright people, and like that's not the world I see. That's when I look around me, that's not the world. We're all flawed creatures. We're all flawed human beings, and I try to build those flaws into my characters. I think it makes them much more interesting, more rounded people.
Heck yes.
So there's no idealism in my writing. I try to write the world as I see it.
That's well, yeah, it comes across. I really related to Mickey and even the other characters at times. They're very real. They come off the pages. We're going to take a quick break here, and I have to play a tune here by a local musician, Jess Weary. Amy Dearest is the song, recorded and produced by David Granati, and drum accompaniment by Crash McCracken. Yes, a real guy. Jess is also a new mom. I want to congratulate her, as well as our muse for our comic book series, Dr. Peeler, Demon Psychiatrist, with my artist, Bob Hoagland. We're going to get right back here with this. I'm totally intrigued with Edward Ashton and his book, Mickey 7, soon to be the film, which you will all be able to see, Mickey 17. Thanks for listening, folks.
Yeah. To its predecessor. Get ready for new, truly terrifying tales set in the broken world from the fall of tomorrow. Take a closer look at what's now dwelling in the dark. If you dare. Available on Amazon in traditional print and ebook. Get your copy today. Visit www.fairlydarkproductions.com for more info on the author and his work.
All right, folks, thanks for coming back. After you just heard Amy Pierce by Jess Weary. And that is a single. She doesn't have an album yet, but you can contact Jess Weary. Go to her Facebook page. She'll be glad to hear from you. Now, we're speaking to Edward Ashton of Mickey 7. This book is science fiction, borderline horror, definitely has elements of. But I have to laugh, and I did laugh multiple times. Just like I said earlier, as a guy that worked for 30 years in the corporate-controlled environment, I related to Mickey Barnes and his frustrations. He's not a perfect person himself, he was forced into this position, kind of, due to life circumstances. I don't want to give too much away. He can trust no one, kind of. Maybe Nasha, who's the flitter pilot that he can trust for maybe sex on the occasion. Maybe Berto, his friend, whom he followed on this quest. As long as Berto feels the extra urgency to save his friend without too much of self-risk. So this is what he's dealing with, and his boss is kind of a type A prick drill sergeant as well. Can you get into the Nasha character a little bit?
Yeah.
Can you answer this?
Is it Naomi Ackie?
Star Wars.
Star Wars, David.
Here we go. Can't escape the Star Wars on this show. It always creeps its way in. And yes, I'm a fan, so I'm not a fan of everything lately. I'm not going to get into that. They hear enough of that here, too. Let's see, what was I saying? Oh yeah, so Nasha, does she, I want to ask you, like, can you answer this, does she have a death fetish, or does she just really like Mickey for who he is?
I wouldn't say that she does. I think she just, Mickey's a likable guy,
and yeah,
she likes him. She has her own traumatic background, mm-hmm. which again, you get into a little bit more in the next book, in Any Matter Blues. But she comes from a different colony that died, that failed really badly. And so she's seen a lot.
Yeah.
And so I think on a certain level that helps her to identify with what Mickey's gone through.
Yeah. And Mickey Barnes himself, he's on the receiving end of banter and admonishment from, because of his ghoulish state that he has, that he can be replicated over and over again. So, I mean, anybody that's new on the job probably goes through something like that. But like you said, this is the worst job in the universe. Now, Mickey 8, how did you, now Mickey 8 comes along pretty quickly. So that's not really a spoiler. How did you make him different than his Mickey 7, his former self? Did you make
That was one of the big challenges of the book, and it's going to be, yeah, and well, I should say it was a great challenge for Robert Pattinson in terms of the acting, because he's portraying both characters, obviously. And that, again, the sort of thing I was trying to illustrate was the idea that we as people, we don't remain static. We're constantly growing and changing and becoming different people. I'm a very different person than I was when Frank and I were going to school together. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. My wife has told me many times that if we had met in those days, she would never have talked to me, probably, let alone dated me or married me.
I think that was the case for most of the women in college.
Same. Yes. Yeah.
So you know, and obviously the separation between Mickey 7 and Mickey 8 is not 20, 30 years. It's about 6 weeks of memories that Mickey 7 has accumulated that Mickey 8 doesn't have.
Hmm.
But even that, because a lot of really important stuff, a lot of traumatic stuff has happened to him in that period, that's enough to make them just a little bit different, just a little bit divergent. And so when I was writing their dialogue, when I was having them, the way they behave towards one another, the way they behave towards other characters, I had to make sure that those differences were always there, but that they were very subtle. Mm-hmm. So you could see, I think you ought to be able to tell when you read a piece of dialogue from Mickey 8, you should be able to tell that's, you know, not necessarily Mickey 7 speaking, just because they have slightly different intonations, slightly different dictions. But they're closer to each other than they are to anyone else.
I want to commend you on that. Frank can tell too in the dialogues, they show up as a separate, font, basically. And it just says Mickey 8 speaking in each of them. But you know, because at that point, Mickey 7 is considered Mickey 8. I can't explain all of that. I don't want to right now. I'll let you guys figure it out. But when he's essentially talking to himself, you can tell who the new version of him is. And who is Mickey 7? And you did such a good job with that. Still see a difference in how the character looks. Maybe his hair is parted differently, or, you know, just something in the eyes. I can't wait to see what they do with that.
Yeah, same. Like I said, I saw about a day of the filming. I did see Robert Pattinson doing a couple scenes as Mickey 7. I never saw him trying to portray Mickey 8, so I'll be very interested to, you know, to see how he handles that and how he makes that come to life.
I think the ultimate insult is when he is threatened by himself in Mickey 8. His own replicant is somewhat untrustworthy, which gives whole new meaning to the phrase "I hate myself."
It's like, yeah, that raises some questions about your own character, doesn't it?
If you
can't trust your own clone.
Got that right. I mean, yeah, there's so much of that. I also saw, like, now this is a totally different kind of science fiction, we'll say, from Star Wars. This is more Kubrick. There's definitely a potential for battle scenes, even in flashbacks with the Manikova backstory. Is that pronounced right? Manikova?
Yep.
With the backstory on why cloning good, but multiples bad. You get into what can go wrong there. Are they going to do any battle scenes? Or are we just going to see that in, like, past vids type things? Or
now here's where we get to the part where I have to explain to you that I signed an NDA when I went on.
No, that's cool.
The script, and basically, if any information about the movie that's not public gets out and can be traced back to me, I owe them $5,000 for every individual who hears that information.
Okay.
He's basically, if it gets out on the internet, I owe them all the money on earth and they can come chop me up for organ meat. And, you know, I'd rather that didn't happen.
All right. I'm fine with that. I wasn't sure. I just, okay. So see, Frank, remember I told you about stepping on landmines? Anyway. but you can talk about the book here when you're talking about multiples being bad. You focused on what could go wrong. Why don't we make a planet of them so we get all our work done? And you explain why.
So this is, a theme that comes up in science fiction a lot. The first reference I could find to this was a short story by Clifford D. Simak called Goodnight, Mr. James. And in almost all of these, multiples are bad. Think Like a Dinosaur is another classic where you've got the ability to do it's that in that one. It's more of like a transporter beam accident where someone can get split, but always you can only have one person. The other one has to go. But it's never explained why, why is that bad? It's just sort of taken as granted because like it helps move the plot along and add some drama. But I wasn't satisfied with that. If I'm going to have that trope, I want to explain why do they think that way? Why is it necessary to only have one individual? Because you're right, like there's some practical things. Maybe you've got an expendable job that takes three guys. Why wouldn't you just make three copies to do it?
Right.
And so I put that backstory in to sort of make it clear that there's a deep psychological barrier to doing that, in the same way that we have deep psychological barriers to doing, you know, some things that were done in World War II or in World War I that really scarred us as people.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I think it speaks to your sense of self too. You know, like if you think you're who you are, how can there be another one of you as well? Then, you know, it puts into question your own individuality and, you know, who you are.
Something Mickey really struggles with throughout the book. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, especially if your multiple is sleeping with your girlfriend.
Yeah, that's a problem.
That is
a problem.
And that's a real problem, real humanistic problem that he kind of has to swallow with some of that cycler paste. You circle around replicants and the idea of immortality. And your antagonists, not the creepers, but I feel Marshall is... who is a religious man or spiritualistic, and he looks at Mickey as an abomination. You treaded lightly on that, and yet just enough to make it really interesting, because a replicant can be considered immortal. How do you look at that?
So that's another point a lot of people have raised. So there's a question of whether the religion that I sort of described in the book, the natalism, my feeling, my argument actually is that the natalists have a point. What they're doing with Mickey really is kind of an abomination, making one person die over and over again so that none of us have to risk ourselves ever.
Right.
That's a very morally suspect thing to do. And I was not putting that religion in the book as something to be ridiculed.
Right.
I think Marshall and his adherents, I mean, I think they've actually got some pretty good points to make.
Mm-hmm. Oh, totally. I look at all sides and I found it all very interesting. And science fiction writers don't usually, aren't bold enough to talk about, immortality, spirituality, and, you know, this is not a religious show that I do here. We talk about horror and science fiction. But yeah, I mean, you really borderline on so many different topics here that I can't wait to read the next book. I'm going to get my hands on that as soon as possible.
This is Kerry Means, the voice of Frylock, and you're listening to Kettle Whistle Radio.
So I have a glossary here that I want to go through full of Edward Ashtonian type stuff. But Frank, you had some character questions.
Yeah. So, and I'm sure I know the answer to this, Ed. Did you borrow the namesake of Mickey Barnes from our mutual good friend, Mickey Lynch?
Uh, I can neither confirm nor deny that.
Okay, and then I think we talked about this one other time, and you had some, maybe subconsciously, the character of Birdo, also a mutual friend, falling into the same category from college days.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I didn't, for sure, that one, I didn't do it on purpose.
Birdo was wrangling around in your subconscious.
Yeah, I just have a tendency to do that. I wrote a story one time that had two characters in it, and I named them Terry and Gar, and somebody told me, that's Terry Gar, you idiot. What are you doing?
That's great. That's almost as bad as my John Locke reference earlier.
Yeah, I mean, my brain just does that to me sometimes.
That's called being a writer.
That's funny. Okay, good. Fair enough.
So some good words to know before reading Mickey 7 or even while you read it. Slurry, what a great word. Between that and cycler paste, I kept visualizing Soylent Green. But can you explain the slurry to folks?
Yeah, so the colony on Niflheim isn't doing so well from a food production standpoint. The planet's basically an ice ball, so they don't really have a great way to grow any food. And so essentially they have to live by recycling, and they recycle everything, literally everything, you know, old tomato stems and bits of skin and fingernail clippings and hair and whatever. All gets thrown into the cycler and reconstituted as slurry. It's basically barely digestible, slightly nutritious stuff that'll keep you alive, but maybe wish that you weren't.
Okay. Yeah. You kind of feel it going down their throats while they're consuming. It's really nasty. Drakkar, spelled like it sounds. I still have some, believe it or not, folks. I knew Frank would laugh at that. That's the ship's name, correct?
Yeah, so there's a lot of my family's Swedish, and so I've always been into Norse mythology, and I did speak a bit of Swedish when I was younger, although sadly I've forgotten most of it. But Drakkar it's a Swedish word. It means longboat. So it's the name of the Viking boats, it was Drakkar,
which
so.
Is perfect. Perfect.
In the Northeast, yeah. It just means Guido scent.
Yeah, right. I think I actually owned a bottle of that when you and I were pals in college, Frank.
Probably,
occasions.
Yeah, we all went through that phase, I believe. Yeah, you kept one in your glove compartment, just in case. Oh my God! All right, so Midgard, that is kind of the new homeworld.
Yeah, again, from Norse mythology, so in Norse mythology, there's nine worlds, and Midgard is the homeworld of men. So that's where they come from.
Yeah, and Earth is not doing too well at this point in time. We haven't heard from them in 600 years, is that
correct? Yeah, Earth is pretty much donezo at this point. They had a bad time.
Yeah, well, we can see where it's going.
Yeah.
Then there's the ominous the Cycler.
Yeah, so the cycler is that's the device which takes all the waste of the colony and turns it into that slurry that everyone loves so much. And one of the things that goes into the cycler is bodies, dead bodies preferably, but as we learn in the course of the book, sometimes live bodies too.
Yeah, yeah. Marshall threatens Mickey with that. That's where multiples meet their ultimate demise, from what I gather.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. Or they try to, yes. Well, Marshall tries to. Cycler paste, we kind of get that now. Cycler paste, first of all, if you have merchandising after Mickey 7, I want the action figure of Mickey 7. I want a creeper playset. And then I want all the 7-Elevens to promote cycler paste slurries as opposed to flurries.
You know, I did an event at a Barnes & Noble in upstate New York a little while ago, and at the cafe in the Barnes & Noble, they made a cycler paste drink.
I applaud them for that.
While I was there.
I have to ask this question. What color was it?
It was purple.
Ooh.
Okay.
Purple.
Oh, so you got Grimace.
They took all of the different syrups they had and squirted it all into a cup and stirred it up with a little crushed ice. And they actually gave me one after I was done with my talk, and it was not awesome.
Oddly, that same That same purple and, I guess, taste that you came with. They call that unicorn here for kiddies going to a certain ice cream parlor. So, yeah, but I think green, it has to be like a bright fluorescent green. And I think 7-Eleven should get on board with that, with the demise of their wackadoo blue back in the day. So what is the release date? And is there going to be another trailer for this as well, for the movie Mickey 17?
I would assume so, yeah. I would expect we'll I don't have any inside knowledge on that at all, but I would expect that we'll start to see, you know, that previous trailer wasn't a trailer, it was just a tease, like a 30-second teaser. That's I would expect we'll start to see real trailers, you know, sometime in the fall.
Before I let you go, I do have to say the character of Gwen Johansson, the sardonic recruiter, I see Janine Garofalo there for some reason.
she could pull it off, absolutely.
Heck yeah, dryness. And kids out there that are looking for something to read, if you're a fan of Orson Scott Card, I not everybody will agree with me with this, but I feel that you will love this book. That Orson Scott Card, of course, of Ender's Game and the whole series of books, which I read all of them. You have a way about you. It's your characters. Pull you right in. And I had to read all of Card's books after that. And I feel the same here. What do we have to look forward to without spoiling anything with the next book?
So the next book starts about 2 years after the end of Mickey 7.
Cool.
It's summertime. Things are nice. Oh. Mickey's life has gotten much better. But again, that sadism thing, immediately after the start of the book, his life gets dramatically worse almost immediately. And, as I said, there's a lot more interaction. We learn a lot more about the creepers and their society and how things work among them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got much more of an adventure feel, I think.
Cool.
One of the nice things about doing a series in science fiction, the hardest part of a science fiction book is the world building. It's getting your reader oriented as to where they are, what time it is.
I agree.
How technology works these days, what society like. I did all that work in Mickey 7, and so in Animated Blues, I was able to get right to the fun stuff.
Absolutely. I will be disappointed if they don't come out with a drone shaped like a flitter, because I want to see what a flitter looks like.
Again, I can neither confirm nor deny whether you're going to see
it. Right. I know. We're going to have to talk again. There's going to be a part two to this, folks. Definitely after the movie or maybe just before it. I'd love to have you back on. Frank,
that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, this has been a lot of fun. Frank, you got something else? I don't want to leave you. And then what happens is when I have a guest co-host, they hit me up later on and say, oh, man, I really wanted to ask him this. And I do the same thing. What do you got, Frank?
No, Ed, I just want to tell Ed, as your friend and someone who was, you know, doing the whole pursuing the Hollywood dream things many moons ago, I have to ask, you couldn't have done this 25 years ago?
Nah.
What the hell, man? I finally get it in Hollywood, and now I'm like, yeah, okay, that's working great.
I was busy raising children 25 years ago. It's tough to tough.
Damn you and your life plan. Damn you and your life plan and family. You know what? It's all about
family. Yeah, it always is. I do apologize.
Spoken like a true natalist there.
I'll get over it.
I should mention my brother-in-law Frank and Ed may or may not know this has had some screen time commercially and otherwise over when they lived on the West Coast. And yeah, he said that very thing to me. Couldn't he have done this sooner? But yeah, feeling the pain. Curious, we always ask our guests this. Do you have a favorite horror movie? And feel free to say multiple.
Honestly, I'm a big fan of The Cabin in the Woods.
Oh, nice. Ooh, okay. We don't get that one often. We always get the top five, you know, Alien, Evil Dead. Alien, you know, of course, you reach that science fiction horror. That's an age-old argument. I find the movie perfect and terrifying. The Thing, John Carpenter, same thing. I don't see a big border between sci-fi and horror. I think they can mince words just fine.
Absolutely. And, you know, Alien's it's a haunted house. Alien is a haunted house movie that happens to be set in space.
Correct.
So, 100%. My thing with Cabin in the Woods probably has something to do with the fact that I live in a cabin in the woods.
All right.
So that just kind of gels for me. But yeah, I really feel like that's almost a quintessential horror movie.
So Star Wars.
Ed, if you two have a whiteboard of horrifying creatures in your cabin in the woods, please share.
Yeah, please. Yes.
Yeah, I don't. That's something I can put on my to-do list, though.
Or
a 3D printer and send it to us.
Yeah, sure.
There you go. So Star Wars or Star Trek for you? I think I know the answer.
Star Trek, for sure.
Okay. I've creeped that way in my older years now since they destroyed Star Wars in that last trilogy. But we're not going to talk about that or Spielberg right now. I'm going to try not to badmouth anybody. All right. So listen, I want to thank you for doing this, and you're always invited back. I want to thank D Factor for the music you hear in the background, Fashion Trashin' for all their help, Frank Latour for being himself, Jess Weary for the music, and guys and girls, head out to www.fairlydarkproductions.com for my book, Dwelling in the Dark, if you're into short stories, or The Fall of Tomorrow, if you're into a demon apocalypse on your day off. Burning Ball Publishing / comics for Dr. Peeler, issue number one. Number two will be out soon. And I want to thank you guys for both doing this. Anything else in closing? Where can we send folks to find you, Ed?
My website is edwardashton.com. So that's... You can find links to all my books. You can find links to a massive number of short stories, which are free out on the web. So, you know, if you want to see some other stuff that I've written, that's a great place to look.
All right. And Frank, do you want people to find you?
I'll just be wandering around my local Home Depot. So, yeah, I could be found there.
This is true. Yeah. He's looking for the cycler paste slurries as well. I'll be looking. Yeah, I'm waiting for those. All right. Thanks again for listening, folks. And also, too, Ed might find this interesting. On an upcoming episode, hopefully after the strike is over, we ran into somebody on the beach in Cape Cod. We'll just say we may have a guest from The Walking Dead at some point. And Frank, you have to admit that was pretty weird.
It was, yeah. And, small worldish.
And also very enjoyable at the same time. This person was lovely. And so you got upcoming stuff coming on Kettle Whistle Radio, and we're definitely going to hear more from Ed Ashton. You have other books prior to this, too, but they're nothing like Mickey 7, correct?
I think you'd find some of the tone similar, but okay. Subject matter, yeah, very, very different. The my previous two books to this one were more near future, sort of contemporary Earth kind of things.
Okay. You want to throw titles out there?
Yeah, sure. 3 Days in April and The End of Ordinary. Both bangers.
Okay, excellent. Well, folks, you got a lot of reading to do. And you got time because we're going to see Mr. Pattison play Mickey 7 in Mickey 17 in March of next year, we're hoping. Now, I did have one thing I want to throw out there. Mickey 17, do you think they're going to have a death montage? Because obviously they're going up to 17 where you went to 7. I know you can't answer that.
I can't answer that, but it certainly seems logical that, obviously he's killing him a bunch more times than I did, and he's got to do it sometime.
You could almost see it. You can see how they're going to do it. And we've seen Hollywood do things like that, but this case is going to be, you can't help but laugh a little bit getting to know the character Mickey 7, but the horror of constantly dying these gruesome deaths, and we do get to hear about a few of them in the book. This definitely, to me, is a horror story on top of a great science fiction novel. And congratulations to you.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
All right. Thanks for doing the show, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Yep.
Good night, folks. Frank, you want to say good night?
Yep. Bye, everybody. Ed, always a pleasure.
Always.
Take care. We'll be right back.
Society 13. Redefining podcasting.
Thank you. Hey guys, it's Miriam Love here, and I want to share something very special with you. Check out my new release, All In, the Spanish Remixes, out now on Electric House Records. And always remember, be love, share love, all love.
Available now wherever you listen to music.
I'm DC. I host the rock podcast, Back to the Arena, The Interviews. It's about a 30-minute podcast where I talk one-on-one with a band who has released new music. You can find us on all the best podcast sites like Spotify, Apple, Google, iHeartRadio, and more. If you're a rock fan like me, subscribe today to Back to the Arena, The Interviews.
Electric Acid. Electric Acid.